Stave 1. Marley's Ghost. Marley was dead, to begin with. There was no doubt whatever about that. The register of his burial was signed by the clergyman, the clerk, the undertaker, and the chief mourner. Scrooge signed it. Old Marley was as dead as a doornail.
Mind, we don't mean to say that we know, of our own knowledge, what there is particularly dead about a doornail. I might have been inclined myself to regard a coffin nail as the deadest piece of ironmongery in the trade. But the wisdom of our ancestors is in the simile, and my unhallowed hand shall not disturb it, or the country's done for. You will therefore permit us to repeat emphatically that Marley was as dead as a doornail.
Scrooge knew he was dead? Of course he did. How could it be otherwise? Scrooge and he were partners for I don't know how many years, and even Scrooge was not so dreadfully cut up by the sad event, but that he was an excellent man of business on the very day of the funeral, and solemnized it with an undoubted bargain.
The mention of Marley's funeral brings us back to the point we started from. There is no doubt that Marley was dead. This must be distinctly understood, or nothing wonderful can come from the story we are going to relate.
Scrooge never painted out old Marley's name. There it stood years afterwards above the warehouse door, Scrooge and Marley. The firm was known as Scrooge and Marley.
Oh, but he was a tight-fisted hand at the grindstone, Scrooge. Hard and sharp as flint, from which no steel had ever struck out generous fire. He carried his own low temperature always about with him.
He iced his office in the dog days and didn't thaw it 1 degree at Christmas.
Once upon a time, of all the good days in the year on Christmas Eve, old Scrooge sat busy in his counting house. It was cold, bleak, biting weather, foggy withal, and he could hear the people in the court outside go wheezing up and down, beating their hands upon their breast and stamping their feet upon the pavement stones to warm them.
The city clocks had only just gone 3, but it was quite dark already. It had not been light all day. And candles were flaring in the windows of neighboring offices, like ruddy smears upon the palpable brown air.
The fog came pouring in at every chink and keyhole, and was so dense without that although the court was of the narrowest, the houses opposite were mere phantoms. To see the dingy cloud come drooping down, obscuring everything, one might have thought that nature lived hard by and was brewing on a large scale.
The door of Scrooge's counting house was open, that he might keep his eye upon his clerk.
Who, in a dismal little cell beyond, a sort of tank, was copying letters.
Scrooge had a very small fire.
But the clerk's fire was so very much smaller that it looked like one coal, but he couldn't replenish it.
For Scrooge kept the coal box in his own room.
And so surely as the clerk came in with the shovel,
the master predicted that it would be necessary for them to part.
Wherefore the clerk put on his white comforter and tried to warm himself at the candle, in which effort, not being a man of a strong imagination, he failed.
A Merry Christmas, Uncle! God save you! Cried a cheerful voice. It was the voice of Scrooge's nephew, who came upon him so quickly that this was the first intimation he had of his approach.
Bah! Humbug!
He had so heated himself with rapid walking in the fog and frost, this nephew of Scrooge's, that he was all in a glow. His face was ruddy and handsome, his eyes sparkled, and his breath smoked again. Christmas a humbug, Uncle. You don't mean that, I am sure.
I do. Merry Christmas. What right have you to be merry? What reason have you to be merry? You're poor enough.
Oh, come then. What right have you to be dismal? What reason have you to be morose? You're rich enough.
Scrooge, having no better answer ready on the spur of the moment, said,
Bah!
Again, and followed it up with,
Humbug.
Now don't be cross, Uncle.
What else can I be when I live in such a world of fools as this? Merry Christmas, out upon Merry Christmas. What's right Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money? If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart, he should.
Uncle.
Nephew. Keep Christmas in your own way and let me keep it in mine.
Keep it, but you don't keep it.
Let me leave it alone, then. Much good may it do you, much good it has ever done you.
There are many things from which I might have derived good, by which I have not profited, I dare say, Christmas among the rest. But I am sure I have always thought of Christmas time, when it has come round the only time I know of, in the long calendar of the year, when men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely, and to think of people below them as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave, and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe that it has done me good and will do me good, and I say, God bless it!
Oh!
Let me hear another sound from you, and you'll keep your Christmas by losing your situation. You're quite a powerful speaker, sir. I wonder you don't go into Parliament.
Now, don't be angry, Uncle. Come, dine with my wife and I tomorrow.
Why did you get married?
Because I fell in love.
Because you fell in love. Good afternoon.
Nay, Uncle, but you never came to see me before that happened. Why give us a reason for not coming
now?
Good
afternoon.
I want nothing from you. I ask nothing of you. Why cannot we be friends?
Good afternoon.
I am sorry with all my heart to find you so resolute. We have never had any quarrel to which I have been a party, but I have made the trial an homage to Christmas, and I'll keep my Christmas humor to the last. A Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Good afternoon.
And a Happy New Year.
Good afternoon.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Cratchit.
Merry Christmas, sir.
There's another fellow, my clerk, with 15 shillings a week and a wife and family, talking about a Merry Christmas. I'll retire to Bedlam.
This lunatic, in letting Scrooge's nephew out, had let two other people in.
They now stood in Scrooge's office. They had books and papers in their hands and greeted him.
Scrooge and Marley's, I believe. Have I the pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?
Mr. Marley has been dead these 7 years. He died 7 years ago this very night.
Oh, we have no doubt his liberality is well represented in his surviving partner.
It certainly was, for they had been two kindred spirits. At the ominous word liberality, Scrooge frowned and shook his head.
At this festive time of the year, Mr. Scrooge, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some sort of slight provision for the poor and destitute, who suffer greatly at the present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessaries. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comfort, sir.
Are there no prisons?
Oh, plenty of prisons.
And the union workhouses, are they still in operation?
Oh, they are. Still, I wish I could say they were not.
The treadmill and the poor law are in full vigor, then?
Both very busy, sir.
Oh. I was afraid, from what you said at first, that something had occurred to stop them in their useful course. I'm very glad to hear it.
Under the impression that they scarcely furnish Christian cheer of mind or body to the multitude, a few of us are endeavoring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. We choose this time because it is a time of all others when want is keenly felt, and abundance rejoices. What shall I put you down for?
Nothing.
You wish to be anonymous.
I wish to be left alone, since you ask me what I wish, gentlemen. That is my answer. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the establishments I have mentioned. They cost enough, and those who are badly off must go there.
Many can't go there, and many would rather die.
If they would rather die, they had better do it and decrease the surplus population. It's not my business. It's enough for a man to understand his own business and not to interfere with other people's. Mine occupies me constantly. Good afternoon.
Seeing clearly that it would be useless to pursue their point, they withdrew. Scrooge resumed his labors with an improved opinion of himself and in a more facetious temper than was usual with him.
Meanwhile, the fog and darkness had thickened so, and the cold became intense.
Colder yet, and foggier. The owner of a scant young nose, gnawed and mumbled by the hungry cold as bones are gnawed by dogs, stooped down at Scrooge's keyhole to regale him with a Christmas carol. But at the first sound of,
God rest you merry gentlemen, nothing you dismay,
Scrooge seized the ruler with such energy of action that the singer fled in terror, leaving the keyhole to the fog and even more congenial frost. At length, the hour of shutting up the counting house arrived. With an ill will, Scrooge dismounted from his stool and tactically admitted the fact to the expectant clerk in the tank, who instantly snuffed his candle out and put on his hat.
You'll want all day tomorrow, I suppose.
If quite convenient, sir.
It's not convenient, and it's not fair. If I was to stop half a crown for it, you'd think yourself ill-used, I'll be bound. And yet you don't think me ill-used when I pay a day's wages for no work.
It's only once a year, sir.
A poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December. But I suppose you must have the whole day. Be here all the earlier next morning.
I will, sir. I promise. The office was closed in a twinkling, and the clerk, with the long ends of his white comforter dangling below his waist, for he boasted no great coat, went down a slide on Cornhill at the end of a lane of boys 20 times in honor of its being Christmas Eve.
Scrooge took his melancholy dinner in his usual melancholy tavern, and having read all the newspapers and beguiled the rest of the evening with his banker's book, went home to bed.
He lived in chambers which had once belonged to his deceased partner. They were a gloomy suite of rooms in a lowering pile of building, up a yard where it had so little business to be.
Now, it is a fact that there was nothing at all particular about the knocker on the door, except that it was very large. It is also a fact that Scrooge had seen it, night and morning, during his whole residence in that place.
Let it also be borne in mind that Scrooge had not bestowed one thought on Marley since his last mention of his 7 years dead partner earlier that afternoon. And then, let any man explain to me, if he can, how it happened that Scrooge, with having his key in the lock of the door, saw in the knocker, without its undergoing any intermediate process of change, not a knocker, but Marley's face.
As Scrooge looked fixedly at this phenomenon, it was a knocker again. To say that he was not startled or that his blood was not conscious of a terrible sensation would be untrue. But he put his hand upon the key he had relinquished, turned it sturdily, walked in, and lighted his candle.
He did pause with a moment's irresolution before he shut the door, and he did look cautiously behind it first, as if he half expected to be terrified by the sight of Marley's pigtail sticking out into the hall. But there was nothing on the back of the door except the screws and nuts which held the knocker on, so he said,
"Humbug,"
and closed it with a bang.
The sound resounded through the house like thunder. He fastened the door and walked across the hall and up the stairs. Slowly, too, trimming his candle as he went. Up Scrooge went. Darkness is cheap, and Scrooge liked it. But before he shut his heavy door, he walked through his rooms to see that all was all right. He had just enough recollection of the face to desire to do that.
Quite satisfied, he closed his door and locked himself in. Double-locked himself in fact, which was not his custom. Thus secured against surprise, he put on his dressing gown, slippers, and nightcap, and sat before the fire to take his gruel. As he threw his head back in the chair, his glance happened to rest upon a bell that hung in the room. It was with great astonishment, and with a strange, inexplicable dread, that as he looked, he saw this bell begin to swing. It swung so softly in the outset that it scarcely made a sound, but soon it rang out loudly.
This might have lasted half a minute, or a minute, but it seemed like an hour. The bell ceased as it had begun. It was succeeded by a clanking noise deep down below, as if some person were dragging a heavy chain over the casks in the wine merchant's cellar.
Scrooge then remembered to have heard that ghosts in haunted houses were described as dragging chains.
The cellar door flew open with a booming sound, and then he heard the noise much louder on the floors below, then coming up the stairs, then coming straight towards his door.
It's humbug still, I won't believe it.
His color changed, though, when without a pause it came on through the heavy door and passed into the room before his eyes.
Upon its coming in, the dying flame leaped up, as though it cried, "I know him, Marley's ghost!" and fell again. The same face, the very same, Marley. The chain he drew was clasped about his middle. It was long and wound about him like a tail, and it was made, for Scrooge observed it closely, of cash boxes, keys, padlocks, ledgers, deeds, and heavy purses wrought in steel. His body was transparent, so that Scrooge, observing him, and looking through his waistcoat, could see the two buttons on his coat behind.
Scrooge had often heard it said that Marley had no bowels, but he had never believed it until now.
"How now? What do you want with me?"
"Much."
Marley's voice, no doubt about it.
"Who are you?"
"Ask me who I was."
"Who were you, then? You're particular for a shade."
"In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley. You don't believe in me."
"I don't."
"What evidence would you have of my reality beyond that of your senses?"
"I don't know."
"Why do you doubt your senses?"
"Because a little thing affects them. A slight disorder of the stomach makes them cheats. You may be an undigested bit of beef, a blot of mustard, a crumb of cheese, a fragment of an underdone potato. There's more of gravy than of grave about you, whatever you are."
At this, the spirit raised a frightful cry and shook its chain with such a dismal and appalling noise that Scrooge held on tight to his chair to save himself from falling in a swoon.
"Mercy! Dreadful apparition, why do you trouble me?"
"Man of the worldly mind, do you believe in me or not?"
"I do. I must. But why do spirits walk the earth, and why do they trouble? Why do they come to me?"
"It is required of every man that the spirit within him should walk abroad among his fellow men and travel far and wide. And if that spirit goes not forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. It is doomed to wander through the world. Oh, woe is me! And witness what it cannot share, but might have shared on earth and turned to happiness."
"You are fettered. Tell me why."
I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard. I girded it on of my own free will. And of my own free will I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you? Or would you know the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? It was full, as heavy, and as long as this 7 Christmas Eves ago. You have labored on it since. It is a ponderous chain.
Scrooge glanced about him on the floor in the expectation of finding himself surrounded by some 50 or 60 fathoms of iron cable, but he could see nothing.
Jacob, old Jacob Marley, tell me more. Speak comfort to me, Jacob.
I have none to give. It comes from other regions, Ebenezer Scrooge, and is conveyed by other ministers to other kinds of men. Nor can I tell you what I would. A very little more is all permitted to me. I cannot rest. I cannot stay. I cannot linger anywhere. My spirit never walked beyond our counting house.
7 years dead and traveling all the time?
The whole time. No rest. No peace. Incessant torture of remorse.
But you were always a good man of business, Jacob.
Business! Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, and benevolence were all my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business. At this time of the rolling year, I suffer most. Why did I walk through crowds of fellow beings with my eyes turned down? Hear me! My time is nearly gone.
I will. But don't be hard upon me. Don't be flurry, Jacob, pray.
I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and hope of escaping my fate. A chance and hope of my procuring, Ebenezer.
You were always a good friend to me, thank
you. You will be haunted by 3 spirits.
I think I'd rather not.
Without their visits, you cannot hope to shun the path I tread. Expect the first tonight when the bell tolls 1. Expect the second when the bell tolls 2, the third when the bell tolls 3, and look that, for your own sake, you remember what has passed between us. When it had said these words, the apparition walked backward from him, and at every step it took, the window raised itself a little so that when the specter reached it, it was wide open and floated out upon the bleak, dark night.
Steel City Shakespeare Center, their production is one that I really enjoyed just hearing that bit of a Christmas Carol. In fact, they brought it to life in ways that were new to me. Listening, I want you to meet all the actors that are here, and just to quickly let you know that the play opens a week from today at 2 o'clock, Saturday, December 8th at Trinity Lutheran Church. Then at Riverstone Books on a week from tomorrow, December 9th at 4 o'clock. And then the following weekend, Saturday and Sunday, the 15th and 16th at Heathside Cottage, Saturday at 7 and Sunday at 2 o'clock. Let's meet our actors first, and then we will come back to our director. I guess we'll start with Sebastian Medenzi, I think. Did I get that right?
Medenzi. Yeah,
Medenzi. Not though. Bad.
I played Scrooge just there, and I play Scrooge throughout the play.
Tell me a bit about yourself.
I've lived in Pittsburgh since July of 2017. This is my third show with Steel City Shakespeare Center. I did the same show last year as actor two. I was doing the roles that Derek is doing this year. And our Scrooge from the previous few years retired from the role, and they asked me to do it, and I was like, well, of course.
Well, I know Michael is listening in Virginia right now. He wrote earlier, and I was going to see, he may not be in a place where he can send us a message.
Fun fact, last year's Scrooge, Michael Makita, he also sold me his car this year. So he not only bequeathed me the role, he also bequeathed me a fine automobile.
Isn't
Thank you,
that
Michael.
Something? So you mentioned you've been in Pittsburgh for just a little over a year. Tell me where you came from before.
I lived in Lexington, Kentucky for a long time before that. Did some theater there with a few companies, Athens West and Studio Players, among a few others. Before that, I lived in Montana when I was growing up.
You're the one. I always wondered.
Yeah, I lived in a few places.
No, I mean Montana. People do live in Montana. You're the one.
Yeah, I saw people passing through every now and then on the highway.
Any Dental Floss Farms or
Dental Floss Farms?
That's a Frank Zappa reference to everybody.
Oh, sorry.
But there's a song you might like called Moving to Montana, which is by Frank Zappa. One thing I noticed in your portrayal, and I don't know if that was just for this morning or if it's part of the play, a number of you had a narrator's role. Do you do that with the characters switching up like that? I really liked it.
Yeah, so the five actors we have here today are our entire cast.
Oh, cool. Okay.
We don't have anyone else.
And this is Jessica Schirmeister, who's the director. That's neat because sometimes they're narrating their own action. I'm not sure if that was exclusive or not. I just liked it. And I think it also makes it move along kind of nicely, too.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes we've done it in the past where we've had just one narrator do all of the narration and then four actors play the characters. But the last couple of years we've done it this way because Steel City likes to have like small intimate casts. You know, we don't have sets, we don't have lighting, we don't have many props, we don't have fancy costumes. Like we're just a bunch of regular people.
By design, and it makes it really accessible too. And I think I'd never really thought about it in terms of the number of people, but you'd have to do that. Tell me, you're Jessica's the director, and tell me a little bit about your life in theater.
I've been in theater for about 17 years. I'm sort of more into directing now than I am acting anymore. But I've lived in Pittsburgh just over 2 years now, and I've worked mostly with Steel City. I've worked with Pittsburgh Shakespeare in the Parks in the past. It's a nice city. I have a lot of friends here, know a lot of theater companies, so.
Do people ever direct without any acting experience?
I think so. I don't know. I personally don't really know any directors who didn't act before.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
But I'm sure there are.
I just can't imagine.
I don't
imagine
know where.
Not,
Scorsese.
Scorsese, yeah.
I'm sure Scorsese has never acted.
Probably.
Yeah.
He's in Taxi
until
Driver. He's
even,
the guy.
Until after he directed first, then became an actor. He switched it up.
Interesting. It just occurred to me that if you don't have the empathy for who it is you're, you know,
it certainly helps,
yeah.
I think.
Well,
yeah.
This is an exciting show. Let's meet Ashley next since I
jumped in.
You jumped in?
Hi.
But it's okay. We don't have to go in order.
I'm sorry, Derek.
Derek, we'll come back to you. So, Ashley, you're the nephew, right?
One of my characters is Fred the nephew, and I'm also Christmas Present, the miscellaneous Cratchit children, not Tiny Tim. Old Joe, the pawn shop owner, and Fezziwig, Scrooge's boss when he's young.
And tell me about yourself.
I come across as a schizophrenic in this show because I do eight voices as eight characters.
Wow.
So that's fun. I've born and raised in Pittsburgh my whole life. My family's been here six, seven generations.
What part of Pittsburgh?
The South Hills.
Excellent.
Southside specifically, it's a little neighborhood called Arlington. Most people have never heard of it.
We know Arlington.
Thank you.
Let's see, are there trolleys still, streetcars?
No. The old streetcar station is still there. It's just a parking lot now.
Okay. Allentown still has some surface trolleys.
They still have the main one down Warrington to the junction. Yeah. That's for emergencies when the tunnel's closed. Yeah.
Down Warrington, the way she said that.
Such a Pittsburgher, I know.
Arlington's a great place. What got you into acting? What made you want to
Based on my mother, she'll tell you I've been acting since I came out of the womb. As the middle of originally three children before it became four, the Alvin of the Chipmunks, as I call my siblings and I. And I just kind of, I'm really short and I'm really loud. So I'm always just, hey! Very Jerry Lewis style.
Yeah, da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
You know, Shakespeare said it best, all the world is a stage. Well, I'm always performing then. But
Did you go to Pittsburgh public schools? Or?
For high school, yes, I did.
Okay, where did you go to high school?
I went to Carrick. It was still good when I graduated
in
2004.
It still is good.
No, it's not.
Oh, careful.
It was better than it is.
Address all cards and letters to Ashley Nevitt.
Yes.
I've been to Carrick recently. They're doing a lot of great things there, but there's ups and downs.
There's ups and downs to every school. When the Pittsburgh Public Schools started closing a lot of the other schools, that added some negativity to the schools that are still open. But they're doing what they can, and God love them for that.
So did you leave Pittsburgh for training?
No.
So you've been here
my whole life.
Seven whole generations.
At least, if not more. Yeah.
That's amazing. Let's go to Derek, who we overlooked before.
Sorry, Derek.
I really liked your portrayal a lot. I can't tell you exactly why, you were really deliberate in the way you were delivering the character. Have you played that role before?
No, actually, this is the first time I've been able to do a Christmas Carol. I've always kind of wanted to, but it's very exciting. I get to do Bob Cratchit, Marley's ghost, Scrooge's young man, Ignorance, and Old Joe's customer. So, yeah.
Tell me about yourself.
Absolutely. I've grown up and lived in Pittsburgh my whole life. I went to West Allegheny and IUP. I have to do the one shameless plug of West Allegheny, Coach Amos, and our state champion men's soccer team that just won 2 weeks ago. So proud alum of that, and I had to get that out there. But and I've been here ever since.
I think one of our staff people went to West Allegheny, who might have graduated when you did, Tad Whistle. Although Tad went to... he would have graduated from West Ham. I should know this, but maybe not. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
He'll probably appreciate the team reference.
Of course.
What made you interested in pursuing acting?
It was just something that I sort of fell into when I was in like middle school and high school, and I really just I enjoyed it. I had a lot of people that were around me that were supportive of it, and then when I got to the point where like what I wanted to do and go to college and study and everything, it was the only thing I ever felt, you know, attuned with. So I just kind of pursued it from there.
That's great. Where'd you go to school?
IUP.
You mentioned that, and that flew by me. I'm
sorry.
Well, it's good to have you with us. Now let's hop over, Ashley, to Aaron McCauley, who's also here. Hi. And what roles do you play?
Good question. I play a few. A gentleman. I actually get to play Tiny Tim, which is a pretty iconic, cool thing to get to say.
I'll say.
And then I'm playing a little boy singing, Fred's wife, Scrooge's sister, Fan, and Christmas Yet to Come.
Oh, my goodness. There's a lot going on.
We all have quite a few, yeah.
Now, you kind of know the drill. I think it's important that people know where actors come from.
Absolutely.
And how they develop their craft and the various... pathways. How about yours?
Sure. My path started in Philadelphia. I lived there until I was about 11, but my whole extended family is from Pittsburgh, so we moved back here around that time. And I started as a dancer, dancing with Pittsburgh Youth Ballet when I came here, and then transitioned into theater as I got older. I really loved theater in high school and just kept working with community theaters through my high school career and up to now, which I'm 36. I have a young child myself. He's now 14, which isn't quite that young anymore, but I've worked in local theaters around Pittsburgh for a couple of decades, and I actually love shows like this. I love classical theater and have a special niche for children's theater as well. I do a lot of work with Gemini Children's Theater, and my son, I like to say that he's grown up on stage because when he was in my belly, he was on stage, and he still does things with theater too.
Excellent. Well, it's nice to meet you. Nice and next to you is Rachel May Pulliam.
Hi.
Did I get that right?
Yes, you Pulliam. Did. I'm a little surprised.
And tell me about you.
Well, I graduated from Pitt this past spring, studying theater. And I've been doing theater since I was a youngin. You know, I was inspired by my older brother doing musicals in high school. And I've always wanted to pursue it. So here I am.
You know, Ed Pitt has a great theater program. They're all a little different, but it's incredible. Between Point Park, Carnegie Mellon, and Pitt, I don't think I'm missing any of the major theater schools, but there really are good programs mm-hmm. at each school. They're different in terms of their specializations, mm-hmm. but they're all terrific. So the play opens up this not today, but a week from today, December 8th. And 9th, and then it will also run the 15th and the 16th. And if you're just joining us, this is Steel City Shakespeare. The director and cast are here with us today. The first run, December 8th, is at 2 o'clock at Trinity Lutheran Church, December 8th at 2, and then Riverstone Books, Sunday the 9th at 4, and then Heathside Cottage right near Allegheny General Hospital on the north side, December 15th and 16th. Saturday the 15th at 7, Sunday at 2 o'clock. Now, there's one more scene, but before that scene, is there anything else we should mention, talk about?
Well, I just wanted to talk about our venues because another thing that Steel City Shakespeare Center does is we don't have a specific venue where we rehearse or perform. We rehearse and perform in sort of found spaces. We don't even usually go to a theater. So this year, our opening performance at Trinity Lutheran Church is actually in partnership with Hello Neighbor and Northside Commons. So we're really excited about that. We've never worked with these groups before. And then Riverstone Books, also our first time there too. It is a locally owned, women-owned bookstore. It's beautiful. If you've never been there, come to our performance, but just visit it in general. It's a beautiful bookstore. It's in McCandless Crossing. And then also, usually our most popular venue is Heathside Cottage, which we're doing December 15th and 16th. It is a pre-Civil War home. It's an intimate space, and the performance is actually a roaming performance where we move from room to room. So the actors and the audience all move from room to room depending on the scene. So it's important to note, too, that for the Heathside Cottage performances, we are capping audiences at 12 people per performance.
Wow.
Because of how intimate this
space is.
That's
amazing.
So if you want to go to those, definitely check out our website and book tickets.
That's like if the actors play a zone defense, they can, you guys can have a good game.
It's very intimate.
12 on 5.
Yeah. And we're also this year, we're doing two private shows too, one with Forward Shady Apartments in Squirrel Hill and then another at Schumann Center.
Oh, that's great. That's great that you're getting into both of those locations.
Yeah, we're pretty
fantastic.
Excited.
Well, this is probably our last chance to talk, and boy, I didn't predict this. We have about 8 minutes or so of radio time, and I hope that's enough time for a meaningful second scene. While you're thinking about that, I'm going to thank all of our guests from earlier today, Josh Gogaware from Beulah Presbyterian Church, Yvonne Hudson from the 8th Annual Handel's Messiah Sing-Along Concert, Trisha Brancolini-Foley up from Handmade Arcade, and Tanner and Avante, and also alongside of them, a pleasure to have Lindsay from Big Brothers Big Sisters of Greater Pittsburgh. And thanks to you for being with us today, too. We're glad you were able to tune in and be part of SLB. So we're going to hear another scene live on the radio from Steel City Shakespeare's production of A Christmas Carol. Any need to set this up, or is it explanatory immediately or self-explanatory?
Well, I think it's a little self-explanatory, but this is the first time that we meet the Cratchit family, which is usually a favorite in the show, in the novel. The Cratchits, we've been talking a little bit, for any Harry Potter fans out there, quite a bit like the Weasleys. We've been talking about that.
So yeah. Ashley's going to really strut her stuff here because she plays many of the Cratchit children.
She mostly plays one, but she embodies many.
I embody three.
You embody three.
I embody the two daughters and the elder son.
Okay.
Yes. But yes. I physically am the elder son.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll turn it over to you. Along with our thanks for being here this morning, once again, the cast of A Christmas Carol, Steel City, Shakespeare. Oh, what do I say? I say mics, speakers, action.
What has ever got your precious father, then, and your brother, Tiny Tim?
Look, there's father now.
In came Bob, the father, his threadbare clothes darned up and brushed to look seasonable.
And Tiny Tim upon his shoulders. Alas, for Tiny Tim, he bore a little crutch, and he had his limbs supported by an iron frame.
And how did little Tim behave?
As good as gold, and better. Somehow he gets thoughtful sitting by himself so much and thinks the strangest things you ever heard. He told me, coming home, that he hoped the people saw him in the church, and it might be pleasant to them to remember upon Christmas Day who made lame beggars walk and blind men see. He's growing so strong and hearty, that one.
Dinner! Bring the goose, Mother!
Such a bustle ensued that you might have thought a goose the rarest of all birds, a feathered phenomenon to which a black swan was a matter of course. And in truth, it was something very like it in that house. Mrs. Cratchit made the gravy, ready beforehand in a little saucepan, hissing hot. At last, the dishes were set on, and grace was said. It was succeeded by a breathless pause as Mrs. Cratchit, looking slowly all along the carving knife, prepared to plunge it in the breast. And when she did, and when the long-expected gush of stuffing issued forth, one murmur of delight arose all around the board, and even Tiny Tim beat on the table with the handle of his knife and feebly cried,
"Hurrah!"
There never was such a goose.
A Merry Christmas to us all, my dears. God bless us.
God bless us, everyone.
He sat very close to his father's side upon his little stool. Bob held his withered little hand in his, as he loved the child and wished to keep him by his side and dreaded that he might be taken from him.
Spirit, tell me if Tiny Tim will live.
I see a vacant seat in a crutch without an owner, carefully preserved. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die.
No, no. Oh, no, kind spirit. Say he will be spared.
If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, none other of my race will find him here. What then? If he be like to die, he had better do it and decrease the surplus population. Man, if man you be in heart, not adamant, forbear that wicked cant until you have discovered what the surplus is and where it is. Will you decide what men shall live, what men shall die? It may be you are more worthless and less fit to live than millions like this poor man's child.
Mr. Scrooge, I'll give you Mr. Scrooge, the founder of the feast.
The founder of the feast, indeed. Oh, I wish I had him here. I'd give him a piece of my mind to feast upon, and I hope he'd have the appetite for it.
My dear, the children, Christmas Day.
Oh, it should be Christmas Day, I am sure, on which one drinks the health of such an odious, stingy, hard, unfeeling man as Mr. Scrooge. You know he is, Robert. Nobody knows it better than you do, poor fellow.
My dear, Christmas Day.
I'll drink his health for your sake and the day's, not for his. Long life to him, a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. He'll be very merry and very happy, I have no doubt.
The children drank the toast after her. It was the first of their proceedings which had no heartiness. Tiny Trim drank last of it all, but he didn't care twopence for it. Scrooge was the ogre of the family. The mention of his name cast a dark shadow on the party, which was not dispelled for a full 5 minutes. After it had passed away, they were 10 times merrier than before, for the mere relief of Scrooge the Baleful being done with.
By this time it was getting dark and snowing pretty heavily, and as Scrooge and the spirit went along the streets, the brightness of the roaring fires in kitchens, parlors, and all sorts of rooms was wonderful.
There they are, Steel City Shakespeare Center. The website, who can tell me the website? Hands?
Give me a second.
I have it up if you need it. I just didn't want to have to turn my head, but.
So it's steelcityshakespeare.weebly, which is WEEBLY.com. But if you just Google Steel City Shakespeare or Steel City Shakespeare Center 2, it's the first result that
improvising
comes up.
I love it. Very good.
For now.
Well done, Sebastian, Derek, Ashley, Aaron, and Rachel May. And you just heard Jessica. And great performances. You have time to get ready for them. Don't forget, for those Heathside Cottage ones, you need to for that in particular, you want to call in advance or...
Yeah, so there's an option on our website where you can email to reserve tickets.
Excellent.
The other two venues, the bookstore and...
The church.
The church have plenty of room, but we're just letting people know because Heathside Cottage is always the most popular venue. So we don't want a horde of people to come and have most people turned away.
That would be sad.
It's a good problem to have, but we don't want to have to do it.
thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Great job.
You.